Okay. All right. I guess I'm a little taller than Jamie. Like Ronnie said, my name is Sandra Evans, and I'll be presenting the preliminary results of a pilot study that was examining the effect of placing commercial kitchens in elementary schools. And I would like to go ahead and acknowledge the project director and my other co-investigators, who are Sherman Chow, Nalini Ranjit, Andrew Springer, and Shelton Brown. And like my previous presenters, I have no relationships to disclose for this presentation anyway. All right, so all of us know there is currently a childhood obesity epidemic going on, and it is worse in Texas than it is in other parts of the country. So here are some prevalence rates for fourth graders in Texas, which indicate that we have about 42% of kids being either overweight or obese. That compares to nationally, where it's about 33%. So we're quite a bit higher in Texas. In addition, like the national data, we also find that African Americans and Hispanic kids tend to have higher prevalence rates than white kids. So we continue to need to develop and evaluate strategies that focus specifically minority kids, but also include white kids. Probably all of y'all know, the IOM came out a year or so ago with a report entitled Accelerating Progress in Obesity Prevention, and two of the recommendations that they made are particularly relevant to my presentation, which is why I just kind of wanted to point them out. But one of them is to make healthy foods available everywhere, and also to strengthen schools as the heart of health. Okay, so why are we talking about commercial kitchens? Well, first of all, many of our children, in the U.S. anyway, eat at least one meal at school that is prepared by the school. We have about 31 million kids that eat lunches, and then another 12 million kids that eat breakfast. In addition, on average, about 50% of calories per day are consumed at school. And for some kids, it's really the only food that they get. So this just shows how important it is that the food that they get at school is of high quality. But what we're currently finding in the U.S. is that we have more of a model of where we're just heating up foods. About 20 years ago or so, we would still find, you know, kitchens in individual schools. School food would be prepared in the kitchen and then would be served to the children. What we find nowadays is that there are a few big food companies, such as Aramark and Sodexo, that supply the food, the meals, to the schools, and the schools just heat them up. So what you find in school kitchens is really only the equipment to heat up food. There's no really equipment left to actually prepare foods. I'd like to just add to that that this is not the case in all school districts, but it is a trend, and it only seems to be getting more so as we go on. So nutritionally, if you look at the nutritional value of these prepared, already prepared foods that you heat up, they comply with the USDA guidelines. But if you look at it at a more qualitative level, it's just not comparable, right? I mean, the microwave meals versus a scratch-cooked meal. It doesn't look as appetizing, it doesn't taste as good, and, you know, if we're trying to teach kids to eat healthy, then is, you know, providing them a heated up meal, maybe it's not the best way to do this. Plus, a lot of times when we have these types of meals that are just heated up, there are no fresh fruits or vegetables included at all. So here are some examples of the heated up meals. And I would like to know, does anybody have any idea what that is? It should have some. Well, no, the white, those sticks. They're what? Well, I realized it must have some kind of protein in it because I don't see protein anywhere else. But I was like, I've never seen these before. Anyway, so these are, I just got these pictures from the internet, but they don't look very appetizing. So this is a meal. And I'm sorry, the picture's not as clear as it should be, but this is a meal that is served at one of the school where I'm working with the commercial kitchens. The pizza is whole wheat, low-fat, whole wheat crust, low-fat cheese, lots of fresh pear, and then a mixed green salad with cucumber and other vegetables. I'm not sure what the drink is, and I should have asked one of my data collectors before I came. I'm sure it's not Coke, though. I'm not sure what it is. Anyway, so what we're trying to do with these commercial kitchens is providing healthier meals that look good and taste good so that kids get used to this idea of eating healthy foods and fresh foods. So just a little bit of background. The St. David's Foundation in Austin is the one who funded the building of these commercial kitchens, and they then asked our group at the Michael and Susan Dell Center to evaluate this. So that's kind of what my role is. I don't have anything to do with the implementation or the intervention itself. So for today, the purpose of this presentation is, again, to present the preliminary data from a study examining the impact of the implementation of a new commercial kitchen. Specifically, we're looking at the student satisfaction of school lunch, the student perceived social support to eat healthfully from their school, parent satisfaction of school lunch, student overall dietary intake, and then also the amount of food thrown away. This is a 3-year study, and we have both intervention school and a control school. The methods kind of got changed during the middle of the study, and I'll tell you why. So originally, we were going to collect data spring 2011, spring 2012, and spring 2013. Spring 2011 was going to be baseline. The kitchen was going to be built and would be started the fall of 2011. So spring 2012 was going to be the first post-test data, and spring 2013 was going to be like a delayed post-test. Unfortunately, the building of the kitchen got delayed, and we have it didn't actually start being put to use until the fall of 2012. So the school principal came back to me. She goes, you know, could you do another data collection? I'd really like for you to do a data collection during November, December of fall 2012 so we can get the immediate impact of the kitchen, and then still do it spring 2013 as well so that we have a little bit of delay. So we ended up with 2 baseline periods and 2 post-test periods. Unfortunately, because of the funding, I could not do that with the control school. So what I'm doing for today is only presenting the intervention school data. I do want to say, if you look at the baseline data of the control school, there were no significant differences between the intervention and the control. However, I don't have the fall 2012, so I can't compare it. Again, the data was collected from students through self-support report surveys, from parents as well through self-report surveys. We did interviews with the kitchen managers and the chefs, and then we also interviewed school staff. At the end of the study, we also did focus groups with the kids themselves. Again, the timeline of the implementation of the kitchen. Spring 2011 and spring 2012, the school used a caterer to provide their food, and it was a different caterer, and this comes into play a little bit later when we look at the results. They seem to have liked one caterer and not the other caterer, as you will see in some of the data. Then again, the kitchen was built in spring 2012, the chef was hired in the summer, and they started using the kitchen in August 2012. Here is a picture of the new cafeteria. They build both a demonstration kitchen and a production kitchen, and the demonstration kitchen is being used to teach the kids how to cook and also to bring in community members and have cooking classes for the community. It's been hugely successful. We have another nonprofit organization called Sustainable Food Center who has a whole cooking program specifically targeted Latino families. And the school serves mostly Latino families, so it's been very successful in bringing in more community members. I also like to point out that the rounded tables, and the principal really wanted to make sure it was more a community, that the kids felt more community, that they wanted to be more family style. She actually wanted to be able to serve the food family style and has not yet received approval from our state because that brings into issue all kind, you know, the amount that the kids get and all that. For our evaluation, it was really good that she couldn't do that because it would have been really difficult to calculate the waste. Here are just some more pictures of the kids. Okay, so for our main hypotheses, we hypothesized that, there would be greater satisfaction with school meals, greater social perceived social support, overall healthier diet, and less waste of food after the implementation of the kitchen. And for the parents, we hypothesized a greater satisfaction with school meals for their children. There was a lot of complaining of from the parents beforehand, and that's why we added this in here, again, on request of the principal. So in terms of demographics, we have three periods of data collection. I'm just showing you one set of data. There were no significant differences. Boys and girls are split evenly. We have pretty similar numbers between 8, 9, and 10-year-olds. And about 70% participated in free and reduced lunch. Okay, so in terms of school satisfaction, and so for the next couple slides, I have the spring 2011, spring 2012 in white. So those are the baseline data. And then the post-test is the orange data. As you can see, we had a couple items where we saw a significant increase between baseline and the post-test, specifically for the item that said, my school has many healthy meal choices, and the healthy meal choices at my school taste good. In terms of perceived social support to eat healthily, we actually saw a significant difference between spring 2011 and spring 2012, and then again at fall 2012. I think what happened was because the teachers especially were thinking that the kitchen was going to be built, they started talking about it, and I think the kids were already perceiving that it was a good thing to eat healthfully, and then when the kitchen was delayed, that kind of played out that way. So that's how I would explain why there are significant differences between the two baseline periods. In terms of parent satisfaction with school lunch, again, we see significant differences between the baseline and the post-test data. For the sake of time, I'm not going to go through all the different items. In terms of overall dietary intake, I need to explain a little bit how we came up with these indices. So we have a healthy eating index, we have a fruit and vegetable index, and an unhealthy eating index. Our dietary questions that were on the self-report survey of the students asked about previous day intake. These were questions that were validated, came from a survey that has been used four times in the state of Texas, have been validated with Latino and African American kids. And for example, the healthy eating index, we would add up all the items that were asking about healthy foods, and then for the unhealthy eating index, we added up all the items measuring unhealthy foods. So again, as you can see, we do see an overall increase in healthy eating and also in fruit and vegetable intake. However, there were no significant decreases for the unhealthy eating index or sugar-sweetened beverages. In terms of waste data, so this is where I think it becomes important that the caterer that was used during the school year of the fall 2011 and then spring 2012 was not very well received. And you see there's a huge increase in waste during spring 2011 and then spring 2012. But then it goes back down again, fall 2012. I do have to say, and this is just qualitatively, there were some issues at first with the foods that were being served in the new commercial kitchen. We had the chef was hired from Whole Foods, and she was very gung-ho and at first started preparing lots of foods that the kids had never seen before. And the kids weren't eating it. It was awesome food. I mean, we would all love it. But these kids are like, what is this? This is like, green stuff. So there were some issues and lessons learned for the chef that, you have to take baby steps. Even when you have, a fully functional kitchen, you can't make too many big changes all at once. I think that was a very important lesson to learn. But in conclusion, we feel that the results from the pilot study are promising. Students are eating healthier, including more fruits and vegetables. Students and parents are more satisfied, and students perceive more social support from the school to eat healthy. And the qualitative data that I did not present, but hopefully maybe I'll present next year, really support these quantitative data. We've got some great focus group data from these kids. So our next steps are we're calculating cost data. We're going to analyze the quality of the school lunch, the nutrition quality, and then analyze our last wave of data. So we have the delayed post-test data as well. So, thank you. No, so the funding came from a private foundation, and it was not cheap. And then to answer your second question, it was the chef came from the outside.
And was that chef covered by the funding that they received, or were they covered by the district's budget?
I don't know. I think they were covered by the district, but I can find out. I don't know.
I guess I'm catching a theme in terms of this question of sustainability. So we have a private donor. Kind of potential do you see for scaling up across school districts and the challenges and maybe the ways to get around those?
Yeah. So the school district I'm most familiar with is the Austin Independent School District, who used to all have individual kitchens. A lot of the equipment has been taken out, but the space is still there. It would be costly to invest and to get that equipment back. However, that's why I think the cost data is going to be very interesting here, because if we can show that the actual production of the meals could be cost effective, then maybe districts would be willing. I don't know. I mean, it would be very costly. You're absolutely right. However, I mean, I think, you know, some of the things that we need to do, I mean, this could make a huge impact for kids. And are we willing to put, you know, our money into that? So, yeah, good question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think some schools do it. For example, they'll add a piece of fruit to the lunch. But again, I think it would need to be a little bit more than just adding a piece of fruit.
It will include
having more labor, and that's what's happened. So they've scaled back on their labor costs because they don't have hardly any people working in the kitchen anymore because that just needs to be heated up. So if you would add the salads and things, you know, you have people chopping, that would be another cost as well. But yeah, you're right, it would be a lot less costly than putting in a whole new kitchen. Yeah. There's someone back there, but go ahead.
I'm sorry, but I was curious as to what the literature would say about satisfaction in school meals and health outcomes and the link between the two.
And I'm not sure there's much literature on that. I've done a little bit of lit review, obviously, for the study, and I haven't been able to find much. And if anybody knows of any, I'd really appreciate it. You would think that, I mean, logically, if kids are more satisfied, they'll eat more of it. But so you want to make sure then that it's healthy if they're going to eat more of it, right? Yeah. The lady in the back? That's great. You said December or summer?
December.
December. Great. Thank you.